We have a very beautiful chapter today called Beyond Power. And if all of us knew this chapter within our hearts, if the message of this chapter were taught from every pulpit in the world, I think the hospitals would go out of business. The doctors would go on vacations. The insurance companies wouldn't have to pay these vast premiums for people who are sick. We'd find that there is a real meaning in peace and goodwill on earth to men. But first we'd have to know the meaning of beyond power. We know that the world has been seeking God, not only for 2,000 years, but before that. We also know the world has not found God. We know the world thinks it is worshiping God, and we're quite certain it is not worshiping God at all. But you know, a strange thing comes to you. Although we may think we are seeking God, most of us are not seeking God at all. We're seeking the power of God. And the power of God and God is quite a difference. We want God power, but we don't want what goes with it. We actually don't want God. Just a little of that power. A little of that power so that I can continue to live my way. Man is unaware that when he is seeking God power, that he must accept God first, because without God there is no God power. You cannot have God's power come into this world. My kingdom is not of this world. And so we have man straddling a fence, living, as it were, in his little pigeon coop, Joel calls it, or doghouse, that human mind, striving to get God to come into this world and do something, but unwilling to come into God's kingdom. And so the mind, completely unaware of its own problem, is trying to overcome. It is trying to overcome its sins, its diseases, its old age, all of the qualities that it doesn't want, it wants to overcome. And in so doing, it is accepting that God is imperfect. We have a special way to come into the kingdom of God. It has absolutely nothing to do with overcoming any problem. It does have to do with the recognition that God being perfect, the problem must be a counterfeit. Now, suppose you had in your hand 10 $100 bills, freshly minted, and on each of them was the picture of your own self, and you went out with these $100 bills to spend them. And everywhere you went, the person you gave the $100 bill to would look at you and say, "Well, that's very nice, but it's not genuine. You're just playing a game." And you might say, no, these are real $100 bills. But no one would accept them. No airline, no department store, no one anywhere would accept these $100 bills with your picture on them. Now you might say, why don't we pray and treat for that? Let's close our eyes and meditate. We might even say, let's get Jesus Christ to do something about this. Surely he can make my counterfeit $100 bills have purchasing power. But ultimately, we'd reach the conclusion that there's only one way to make purchasing power, and it isn't to try to spend those counterfeit bills, it's to get real ones. Now, the same thing happens when you have a problem. You want to get rid of it. just as you had wanted to spend those $100 bills. But try as you will to treat, it is still there. You cannot overcome it for the same reason that you couldn't overcome a counterfeit $100 bill. You must find the genuine. To dwell in the idea of overcoming, removing, healing that which is counterfeit is the false conflict of the human mind. Man is trying to do just that. He's trying to overcome his human problems without the realization that because God is perfect, every problem must be a counterfeit. A real problem in the presence of God is unthinkable, and God is omnipresent. Now then, that is why we have the chapter Beyond Power. Not to find a power that can overcome my counterfeit problems, but one, to realize that every problem on this earth is a denial of the omnipresence of God and the omnipotence of God, and this very denial is the nature of removing ourselves from the very power of God that the counterfeit mind is seeking. Having established to your conviction that you cannot have a real problem, in spite of what your mind may think, you are then prepared not to remove the counterfeit problem, but seek ye first now the kingdom of God. Now to move away from that which appears to be the problem, even to the tune of looking at whatever your problem might be and knowing whatever is true of the Father is true of me. That's like a clown smiling through his tears at first. But the presence of God being where you stand, the love of God being omnipresent, that love is the only power on the face of this earth. And any other suggestion of power, belief in power, acceptance of power, is an acceptance of two powers, the power of God and the power of something else. And it is that belief, native to every human mind, which lives in the belief that there is beside the Father another power, or another 1,000 powers, and I must fear all of them. That belief in us opens us, makes us vulnerable, and ultimately involves us in the defense of our own physical and mental and financial self against the ravages of these powers that we suspect are present. They are all counterfeit. They never have power except in the little doghouse, the little pigeon coop, the little human mind which is separated from God. Now then, what will we do to come into the understanding of no power? Now let's suppose that you like to paint pictures. You put up your easel, you put your canvas on it, you get set just where you want to be, and you look out there at that beautiful landscape, and now you start working from your palette onto the canvas. When you're finished, you put your name in the right-hand corner somewhere or the left. This is your painting. If someone had come along and had painted half of it for you, you wouldn't put your name on it. This was your painting. Everything on that canvas, you did. Now, to come to know power, we have to give God that privilege. We have to turn to the Father and say, I am going to be a blank canvas, and you paint the picture. You paint a picture of my life. I won't make a stroke. It's your palette. It's your canvas. It's your easel. It's your universe. I'm giving the universe back to you. It's your life. I'm giving the life back to you. And whatever you paint, That will be me, appearing as a form on this earth. I will be your living canvas. And turning that back to the Father, letting the Father paint my life, letting his brushwork, his mind work, his thoughts, his power, his presence, everything that he is, become that which appears as me. This is coming into the realization that because only God is, I must be included there, and I can trust that which is the power of God to run a perfect universe, including a perfect me. I'm seeking no power. I want no power. For having the Father, I have all power. Now we're accepting the gift that the human mind has ever refused. It is the gift of God, which is the gift of life. We're saying, Father, you are infallible. I can no longer be separated from you, searching for your power, your goodness, your rewards. I accept that only your love is the present power of the universe. I withdraw all need, want, and desire for any power. I can rest in the fact that all God is all that exists, and therefore there is no need for power. The mere need for power was a belief in a life and activity other than God. Knowing that there is only God, I reach that pinnacle of consciousness where I need no power, but rest, dwell in the knowledge that God being all, God needs no power to improve anything in this universe. I am not healing, I am not improving, I am not correcting. I am resting in the infinity of God. Now, when you have a problem, a pain, you will discover that the last thing you are interested in at the moment is to sit down and philosophize about God. But we're going to take a specific problem right now and put to the test the principle of no power and carefully rehearse each of us just what we would do if, for example, this morning you woke up with a pain that was quite severe, and you wondered, what shall I do? Your first reaction would be, now what chapter could I read that would help me? Or what tape could I hear? Or if you were not in this kind of work, I wonder if the doctor works on Sunday. Then you might sit down by yourself and try to reason out what you're to do. Always you find in the moment of the pain, you have accepted the reality of it. You have not taken the time to look through it and accept that it is a lie about the allness of God. And so you may think that your thoughts are not going to be very powerful anyway. What's the difference? What I think? This pain is here. But let's go about this a different way, and let's get a practical way of letting God reveal God's presence. Let us look at this pain and ask ourselves, does God bring pain to a person? Remembering that what you think is important, for what you think is going to bring you to a place where you can finally receive God's thought. Now we look at our pain and we must admit, no, God didn't bring this to me. The God of love does not inflict pain. The God of love is the only creator, the only cause. Now, who brought the pain? If God is the only creator, who created the pain? Can someone else create the pain if there's only God the creator? Can a condition create a pain? You're standing on the absolute that what was not created by the Father was not created. And yet you've got a pain that God didn't create. You've got a pain that wasn't created. Therefore, what is the pain? It's your ignorance of truth. Now, it's good to face that, because you're dealing with that which will stand you in good stead for all the years to come. Whenever I have a pain, that is evidence of my ignorance of truth. Now, it may be a burden, but let us look at it as a burden of love. Let us see that if I did not have this pain, I could not rise to the point where I see the nothingness of pain, and I would be very happy to settle into my comfortable imitation of life. All these little burdens of love, which we call problems, are making us face the reality that what we are living in this world is the imitation of life. And so now comes the pain. And because you must come to the place where you see it was not created by God, it was not caused by God, it is not derived from the power of God, and there is no other power, creator or cause, I have unreality causing me pain. Strangely enough, as I can realize this to a degree, I begin to feel the lifting of a measure of that pain. Now we've got to go to the place where the pain is. Let's say it's on the right side, the left side, wherever you have it. Is God there? And if the answer is yes, then the question must be, how can God and a pain be in the same place? Now then, if I still insist that I have the pain, I have denied that God is there, and I have denied that God is the only creator, and I'm throwing the book of John out the window. For John assures us, if God didn't make it, it wasn't me. Now suppose I come to the belief that God is the only cause, the only creator, and God is there where the pain appears. Now I'm beginning to see that the pain rests where? It rests in that little doghouse of a mind. I thought it was in my body, but it isn't. The pain is never in the body. The pain is always in the mind. The mind imagines it to be here and there and in other parts of the body, but always the pain is in the mind. And why is it in the mind? Because the mind is a relay station for the thought of the world. And so now you're taking the pain out of the body. That isn't where it is. You recognize that it is in the mind. And again, you feel a measure of relief. You are facing that God is the only creator. God does not bring pain. The pain is not in the body, for the body has no life. The pain is in the mind. The pain is a mental idea. And the pain, the mental idea, is being received from the world consciousness. Now you've got it located accurately. Now let's go back to the body. Did God create that body? Or are we living in the sense of body, which is a body image? What is that body image? What is it made of? This that you call my body. If spirit is all, what is this body image? Science tells us what it is. Atoms. All right. Now I have a pain in my atoms. Let's look at those atoms. What are they? We find that atoms are energy. Little electrical particles scurrying all over the place. We don't see them. But that's where the pain is. Atoms. Now we get into those atoms and we find a very beautiful thing to know. Atoms are mostly empty space. There's hardly any solidity to them at all. They are completely electrical charges. But what are these electrical charges? They are the energy of the mind. Mental energy. Mental energy creates atoms. Atoms which appear to be solid flesh and blood. Where does this mental energy come from? Not your mind. It comes from the world mind. And it relays itself through your mind, and now it's atoms in the body. You have a body image of atoms. And so we're looking out at a world which we call matter. But it isn't. It's mental energy. Body images. Tree images. Bird images. Images of form made of mental energy. The world, which is not our Father's kingdom, is world mental energy. And someday, a child will be born, and it will be taught, before it knows anything else, that this world is made of images. This is an image world. And if you and I had been taught that, that this is an image world, we would think nothing of it. It would become just as easy to know that as what we have grown up to know. We would know that everything in the world is a mental image. And we would learn that our function on this earth is to make those mental images conform to the divine idea instead of to the counterfeit mind. That would be our purpose. And because we had not been conditioned to accept the forms as real, as creations of God, as ourselves, it wouldn't be difficult at all for us to realize that this outer world represents the inner consciousness of each individual. And that as the inner consciousness is purified to transmit only the thought of the divine, the outer images would be the divine image and likeness. This would become very normal for every child. And then whenever we saw in the outer images impurities, lacks, limitations, we would know that we had a function unfulfilled. We had not connected the without with the within. And so we were separated, and the without was showing forth that separation. This is what we will learn to do. This is what we're learning to do now. Now our function then is to bring forth indivisibility, the divine image and likeness of God. In our experience, in our neighbor's experience, wherever we go, to acknowledge not the form, which could be good or evil, but to acknowledge the invisible presence of God, which is always perfect. And thus, in acknowledging me in all thy ways, you are keeping your mind stayed on the truth, not slipping back into a world of matter, into a world of atomic images, into a world of human and world thought, but rather resting in the conscious awareness that my kingdom is not this world of images. This world of images is the added things. My kingdom is the Father, the Spirit of God. And only in my conscious awareness of the Spirit, in my spiritual consciousness, do I receive that bread which is not the bread of this world, that bread which is of the Father's house, that bread which satisfies. Then I can rest. I'm not seeking a power. I'm not trying to improve anything. I am resting in the presence of God, the realization that where I stand, the Father is. And Father, it's your universe. I am letting you run it your way. Then those images out there are going to be divine, instead of human, instead of mortal, instead of human mind images. And the added things that come will be the very things that I had been seeking to bring out there in my human way, but had failed to do. And so we have here a place where you see that you are to come into the acceptance that because God is here, functioning now, and because all that the Father hath is mine, it makes no difference if I have a pain. That pain is part of my initiation. Its purpose is to make me unsee that pain. I must accept the challenge of this initiation and not be tempted to deny the presence, the power, the allness of the Spirit of God. And my initiation will be as long as I want it to be. It can be 500 years or 5 hours. My initiation must continue until I have reached that place where I put up my sword, where I seek no defense, where I am not fooled into trying to remove what appears to be my problem, but rather can see it as a counterfeit. Every problem is a counterfeit. Every pain is a counterfeit. Every anxiety, every fear is a counterfeit. My initiation is over the moment I know this and can rest in the peace of the Father's presence, needing no power to overcome the counterfeit, which is called my problem, my pain, my worry, my anxiety, my fear, my lack, or my limitation. Then I am in a state of the acceptance and the realization that God being all, that there can be no power other than that which is the power of God. Now I am not asking God to come into my world and use God's power to make my world better. I am not saying to the Father, you didn't make this world, but improve it. You didn't make this world, but remove the problems of it. I am saying to the Father, there is no world. There is only your kingdom. Seen through the glass darkly of that little mind, we have a world. But right where this world is, I accept the kingdom now, here. The Father, now here. My spirit, as the spirit of the Father, now here. And through the tears, through the pain, through the conflicts, there is the acceptance that I am perfect now, in spite of what appears. But that is the truth, and it is the truth that makes you free. You can rest in who you are and who God is and know that they are one. Now, if you do not do this, you're falling into the trap. And you can see how sharply honed your consciousness must be in order to refrain from doing this. To resist evil is a natural human instinct. To preserve the mind and the body and the home and the finances is a natural human instinct. And we are to overcome our natural human instincts in the realization that in God all is perfect now. As you remember, our assignment for the year is to take dominion over mind and body, over mind and matter. And to do that, we must come face to face with the understanding that our own mind is the liar about God. Our own mind is an accomplice to the false creation. Our own mind is the illegitimate father of every burden that we carry. And that mind is constantly separated from the one mind of the Father. There is only one mind, God. It doesn't destroy evil. It doesn't destroy hate. It doesn't destroy things in this world. It hasn't done that in 2,000 years or more. God hasn't destroyed our enemies. God hasn't destroyed poverty and starvation or disease. Sin can run rampant on this earth and God will do nothing about it. But you and I, enlightened, aware, living in the spirit of our being, we can say, oh, that is only the arm of flesh. Meaning, counterfeit, a false appearance, a thing called cosmic thought. The mist in the Bible, and in our awareness of the counterfeit nature of this cosmic mist called world thought, we can smile. They have only the arm of flesh. We have the Lord God Almighty. We have the awareness that God is the only self, the only life. Now, it's a good idea to let yourself be purified of all thought and belief so that you present to the Father a blank canvas each day. You may think it's just a one-day job and do it well that day and then forget to do it the next. But we have to come into the kingdom with an empty canvas, an empty blackboard. No beliefs. Because if you have a single belief, you're activating the mind which is separate from God. Ultimately, you see, that mind, separate from God, must be transcended. And so you practice eliminating the false activities of that mind. You acknowledge the Spirit of God in your neighbor. You refuse to condemn. You refuse to resent. You refuse to gossip. You refuse to hate. Why? Because you are acknowledging the Spirit of God rather than that which the mind sees. one by one, you purge the mind of its activities, which are a denial of the allness of spirit, the perfection of spirit everywhere, the love of spirit everywhere. And now you're reaching a place where the mind can take no thought for its life, for what it shall eat, or wherewithal it shall be clothed, because it has accepted that there is no power needed, that there is no power that can take its life, no power that can starve you, no power that can deny you the necessities. No weapon that can be formed against thee can prosper, because you constantly live in the acknowledgement of only the power of God, the only power on the earth and in the heavens, never denying it by word, deed, or thought, alertly catching yourself every moment that in some way you have turned away from this truth, so that you can stand in Gethsemane, if necessary, with the realization that even here, the Spirit of God is my only protection that I need. The Spirit of God is my health. The Spirit of God is my safety. The Spirit of God is my sustenance in all things. Why? Because that's all there is. And what about these appearances? That mind, which had believed in these appearances, is no more. I am no longer standing in my senses, no longer standing in that belief that God can be imperfect on Tuesday and perfect on Wednesday. No longer standing in the belief that there will ever be a day in this universe when God is less than all there is. Now that is your initiation. And when you're standing as a blank canvas, needing no power to defend you, you'll find the sky is raining with loaves and fishes. You'll find sustenance appearing everywhere. You'll find the glory of that presence manifesting, revealing itself where you stand as the absence of pain, the absence of lack, the absence of limitation, the presence of the fullness that you have been able to accept in your consciousness. For now, you are thinking God's thoughts. And as you think God's thoughts, they are backed by the power of God, and they are made flesh. You are truly one with God now. And from personal experience, you may find, or have found, as I have, that we truly have no need to eliminate problems, to reduce fevers, to dissolve lumps. For these exist only in the separated mind. Our need is to become unseparated. Not just when we have a lump or a disease, but always. Now try with me this release to the Father, in which all that you are, you surrender. Heart, lungs, liver, back, shoulders, arms, brain, complete mind and body and soul, to God. Trust Him to live Himself as yourself. You find the separation of the mind is overcome. And with it comes my peace, not as the world giveth, but the peace that really passeth understanding. It is the peace of your acceptance that God is where you stand. And right this minute then, everywhere throughout this universe, all that concerns you is being perfected by God. What you shall do for the next 5 million years, how you shall do it and where you shall do it, all is being perfected in the invisible by the one mind, the one presence, the one power. And to know this, to find that it is true, is to experience more than just a concept about God, more than just a religion about God, but to experience the living God where you are. This is the only God there ever has been. The actual presence of God as your living experience, living itself as you. Now we have God, and we do not have to seek God power. God realized is the power of God functioning where you stand. It goes before you. And it gives you the signals, sending its angels, its thoughts, its impulses, directing you, so that you're only passive in your meditation, but you're very busy out in this objectified world, doing your Father's business. Let's see if we can take this principle of no power a little further after an intermission, and see how we can make it part of our daily existence. Living not by bread alone, but by the word. We'll be back in about 5-6 minutes.